Hi, I'm Liz Larson.
And I'm Bill McKenna. We're the hosts of the New Life Perspectives radio show.
We're also the creators of the Cogno Movement System, where we help you rewire your nervous system so you can rewire your reality.
Join us each week for great conversations, amazing guests, and cutting-edge information on health, consciousness, and the keys to transformation.
In 1964, Norman Cousins was the editor of the Saturday Review when he developed an extremely painful inflammatory connective tissue condition. He was diagnosed at the time with ankylosing spondylitis. He became so stiff that he reportedly struggled to move his limbs, turn his head, or even open his jaw. But Norman Cousins believed that positive emotions might counteract some of the physical effects of prolonged stress. Cousins worked with a physician to develop a really unconventional addition to his medical care. He left the hospital and went to a hotel. He received very large doses of vitamin C and deliberately exposed himself to comedy. He watched the Marx Brothers, Candid Camera, all kinds of comedy films and programs, and he even read humorous books, such as books by E.B. White. Cousins reported that about 10 minutes of genuine belly laughter produced an anesthetic effect and allowed him to sleep for around 2 hours, pain-free. He also reported that during this period of time, his measurements of inflammation actually improved during his recovery. His condition eventually did improve substantially, and he returned to work at UCLA. And he says that both vitamin C and laughter really were important parts of his recovery. He eventually went on to publish the story in the New England Journal of Medicine in 1976, and then later went on to publish a book under the same name as the article in the journal, An Anatomy of an Illness as Perceived by the Patient. It became very popular and eventually spurred a whole movement called laughter therapy, which moved into even things like laughter yoga. Now, it's often stated that Norman Cousins cured himself of the disease with only laughter. But the truth is he did have other medical care. It's just that his recovery was faster and more complete. There's another story of a woman named Sarah Ann Rothberg, a woman diagnosed with stage 4 breast cancer, who founded the Comedy Cures. After using comedy and laughter to help her cope throughout her cancer treatment, even though she did receive traditional cancer treatment, she claimed that comedy made a big difference in her recovery as well. So why is this happening? Why would laughter have anything to do with healing? It's interesting because laughter appears to activate the stress system briefly. It accelerates the autonomic and hormonal recovery. So what it does is it actually increases your heart rate, your breathing, your muscular activity. Sometimes your blood pressure even increases. So this sounds a little more like fight or flight, but it isn't. Parasympathetic cardiac activity may actually decrease during laughter itself. So laughter initially resembles a short burst of physical exertion or positive stress, and it's sometimes called eustress. But when the laughter stops, the heart rate and breathing settle, the parasympathetic influence can return, producing the loose, calm feeling that people often experience during hard laughter. So this is really interesting, and it brings to light the idea that even things like stress, even things like disease, we know they create inflammatory response, can be in some ways shut off or diminished by a change in emotion. Now, we know this one. We know that when we're in a fight with someone, an argument, something really intense, and somebody accidentally says something ridiculous, or farts, for example, that all of a sudden, all that tension, all that anger can melt away into hysterical laughter. And after that hysterical laughter, it seems like it's hard to find the problem again. It's really hard to get back to that place of fight or flight. So our question really for today is simply this. Is there more value in pain, fear, stress, sadness, regret, guilt, shame, blame, than in the emotion of fun, laughter, reverence, wonder, curiosity? What value do we put on them? And is it even possible to intentionally override those stress hormones? So let's go back just for a minute to the body. Stress hormones are hormones that happen when your body's in fight or flight. They're produced by your adrenal glands. Now, when you're in fight or flight, when you're running from a lion or running from a fight, or you need to get bigger than something, you need to get stronger than something, your body automatically turns on stress hormones that come from your adrenal glands called adrenaline and cortisol. But these are super important because they allow us to get moving. They allow us to be stronger, faster. What they don't allow us to do is feel calm. So these stress hormones that run in the body without being released. So when you're actually in a physical fight, when you actually do have to run, when those hormones are burnt off, you're left relatively calm after there's this come down period. But in our modern day society, we don't do that. We're just stressed nonstop all the time. And those hormones just flood the body and never get removed. But what they do is create inflammation. At the root of almost every illness is inflammation. But with laughter therapy, and now there have been many, many studies around it since the 1960s, we find that it has the ability to really reduce those inflammation markers, which is significant. So many people around the world now have used laughter therapy in conjunction with traditional therapies and not to quote unquote cure illness. Now, this is powerful. And some might say, oh, it's just the placebo effect. But there's physiology that has been studied to back this up. We know that if we can reduce inflammation, that we can often reduce illness. They go hand in hand. The problem is that unless it's spontaneous laughter, how do you do it automatically? What is the mechanism? And also, can you put your attention there? Do you value laughter over pain? Do you value reverence over suffering? Do you value beauty over depression? It's interesting because then it becomes conscious. Most people feel like our emotions are in no way conscious, that they're automated, that they're built in, that we can't help it. And the truth is, that is not the case at all. There's recent literature that finds that our emotions are not hardwired in, but in many ways learned. Our reactions are learned. And I believe that this is very true. Think about it this way. If you have a family that reveres spiders, that you have them in your house, they're in a cage, you have tarantulas, maybe you raise them. A spider to you becomes nothing more than a pet. There's nothing to be afraid of. But if you come from a family or you've ever seen someone see a spider scream and be terrified, you learn that you are terrified by a spider. Okay, that makes sense. But if you learn that, let's say, for example, during menstrual periods for women, if you have a household full of women in which the matriarch has severe menstrual cramps, has depression during that time, has bloating, maybe overeats, or even has anger outbursts, You'll find that the women in that household learn that this is what we do. This is how it is. This is how we are during this time. So you would say, oh, no, that's emotional. That is physical. Yes, that's the point. Your emotions are physical. So I've seen this in my own life, in my own family, family members who had this pattern of really explosive periods, if you excuse the word, of pain and of anger and of, it was like a time to be out of control. And I noticed that the girls in that family were starting to go down that path. So I sat them down and explained that that wasn't what it was like in my family at all. And that it was possible to feel okay. And there were ways to intervene on the days that you didn't. But being out of control and losing 4 or 5 days of the month was unnecessary. And it was interesting because those girls started out having that explosive time and really missing days or weeks of a month and shifted to where they don't have that at all. They have the knowledge that their body does not have to go into that particular pattern. And so they don't. So I've seen this as well with depressive patterns. I know a family where the mom at the time really had what would now be probably called fibromyalgia. She'd had 3 children very, very quickly. And her pattern was laying on the couch, lots of depression, lots of inflammation, just a lot of periods of down. And the women in that family, the girls who were raised, started down that road as well. Until they were introduced to another family in which the women did not behave that way, they realized they had a choice. So interestingly enough, those women had been diagnosed with whatever it was during the day, that day that caused this malaise. And their aunts had it and their grandmothers had it. But these younger women, when they were introduced to another way, realized that their lives didn't have to be that way. And so they did not go down that path. So it really raises a super interesting question. Is disease hereditary because of our genetics? Or is it hereditary because of what we've seen, what we know, what our body thinks is normal? What do we value? In all the cases that I just told you about, people I knew personally, and there's hundreds more than that, it was when they realized that there was some other way to be, they chose. They chose something else, even though this is the environment that they'd grown up in. And even the environment that they'd started to go down that path, they were able to consciously put a higher value on a different way of being. So this is the question. If you become aware of another way of being, if you become aware that you can choose to value certain emotions, certain physical patterns, and put your attention on them, that you could literally change the way your body acts. You could literally change the way your hormones behave, the way your brain behaves, the way that even your blood pressure behaves, your autonomic systems. So what we learned from Norman Cousins is that his autonomic systems changed. He created pain relief from the emotion of laughter. Now, laughter isn't just an emotion, is it? It's a very physical response. Have you ever laughed so hard that your belly hurt, that your face hurt? Have you ever laughed so hard that it felt like a workout? I definitely have. So it's very physiological. And from all the studies that have happened around laughter therapy, it turns out that it definitely turns down inflammatory markers, that it definitely is healthy for the body to laugh, and it changes up physiological things within the body. So let's take our first break, and when we'll come back, we'll dig in a little bit more about some other emotions that you can switch to that will turn down those inflammatory markers, but also make a huge difference in how you think and feel. So let's hear from the good folks at the UK Health Radio Network, and we'll be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Somewhere on Earth, there are 4 acres that belong to you. You don't need to be there in person, only there in purpose, protecting it, defending it, keeping it alive. Because the world doesn't need more good intentions. It needs more meaningful actions. Register your interest at 4acresearth.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
And we're back. We are talking about things like laughter therapy. Can you choose a different emotion to turn down inflammatory markers and change the way you think and feel? And the answer is 100% yes. Everyone's heard this. You know that it's all about your attitude. I have known many people who've had really stage 4 and beyond cancer. People that have been turned away from medical care and told you need to go home and die because you're not recovering from this. And again, their attitude was like hell. That is not happening to me. And sure enough, they overcame whatever it was that was going on in their life that was said to be terminal. I've told this before, but I knew a woman who had cancer that was literally wrapping around her heart, like tentacles was how it was described. And she was so tenacious that she went on a juice fast. It was just carrots. They didn't have any money. So they got the carrots that were fed to horses. She actually turned orange, literally looked orange from all of these carrots, but the cancer receded. Now it is 40 years later and that woman is still alive. She has outlived really everyone else in her peer group, including her husband, who was very, very healthy. But her attitude was this: I have too much to live for. I don't accept this. So she did whatever it took to not have that situation. And she's one of many, but it was about attitude. So how do you get to that attitude? How do you choose to overcome and override what seems to be set in concrete, what your body is doing? Well, it has everything to do with knowing how to shift from one emotion to the other emotion. In her case, it really was determination. It was about her kids. She was determined to be there for her kids. They mattered more than anything. So her attention shifted there, off of this illness that she had and onto being 100% certain that she was there to raise her kids. In her case, you might have called it love that overrid this inflammatory disease in her body. In another case, you'll see people that go up into the mountains, go onto a journey, on their own. Maybe it's Yellowstone. Maybe it's Yosemite. Maybe it's the Camino in Spain. They take time out and they go somewhere absolutely beautiful to find themselves. You hear these stories again and again and again. Why does this work? Why does this help people recover from unrecoverable things? In this case, the emotion might be reverence. When you go into nature, there is an emotion that turns on in the body that is one of the highest vibrating emotions that we have, called reverence. It's can also be described as awe-inspired. Have you ever stood at the edge of the Grand Canyon and were overcome with a sense of awe and wonder and just the magnificence of the beauty? This puts us into that parasympathetic state again, that state where the heart rate does rise for a few minutes, breathing even increases. The body moves into a euphoric state and then softens into softer breathing, a lower heart rate, a calmer overall body. Reverence is one of the fastest ways to shift the body. And you can do this by simply walking into a forest, going to a place of absolute beauty. In our area, we have the Rogue River, and the headwaters are spectacular. There is a gorge that is absolutely beautiful that can shift a person out of a low state of energy or emotion into awe and wonder in seconds, absolute seconds. And it changes the way the body functions. So going on a journey, you know, into nature, for example, allows the body to shift out of the limbic system pattern of fight or flight stress and into one of reverence and wonder, and changes the way that body's functioning. Once those stress hormones are turned off, the body can actually just spend its energy healing. The body can actually focus on something other than the fight or flight that is creating those stress hormones. What about joy? So joy and laughter go hand in hand, but they're not exactly the same thing. Joy, I always say, is love plus fun. If you think about it, pure bliss, pure joy is a little different than just having a laugh at a funny movie. It's more like being in that state of a bit of reverence mixed with deep compassion, love, and then you add that little bit of fun on top. This is a feeling, if you've ever been in pure joy, a bliss state that's almost indescribable. You feel it all the way to the edge of your skin. I was at a place in Cape Cod recently visiting a client. They had this beautiful home, and the place was so spectacularly beautiful that this was the feeling that I got. Joy at the beauty. There was reverence. There was a sense of love that was put into this beautiful, beautiful home. And it was just fun to be in this space. It was a surprise. This is the thing with fun. There's always a bit of an element of surprise in it that creates this uplifted moment. It's almost impossible for your body to also feel pain, also feel depression, also feel sadness. They are two different ends of a spectrum, and the body either focuses on one or the other. So it sort of makes sense that people who go off into a very, very beautiful place and explore and have wonder change their lives completely. They have huge epiphanies, lives turned around, a life of sadness and depression or fear and grief are turned into joy and purpose just from that very singular event of going out and experiencing something wonderful and beautiful. Now, what do we do if we really don't have time? We really don't have the resources. We need to change how we're feeling right now. This is where the work of cognitive movement comes in. Because we know that the body can change very, very rapidly, but it needs a stimulus. When you're in a pattern of fight or flight, especially one that is extended, long-term, fight or flight, fear, grief, pain, anxiety, shame, guilt, even apathy, that pattern is run pretty deeply. And the nervous system starts to rely on that. It becomes the new normal. So what you have to do is be able to shift out of that nervous system pattern and into another pattern. So we've just heard that one of the ways to do that would be to watch something funny. Turn on your favorite comedy show. Some of the older ones are really great, like The Laugh-In. Have you ever seen The Laugh-In with Goldie Hawn? It's hilarious. You can watch replays of it on YouTube even. And it's so funny and it catches you off guard. And there's such a surprise in how silly it is and a little raunchy that all of a sudden you find yourself laughing without even realizing it. All of a sudden, you notice that whatever it was you were feeling badly about doesn't exist, even for that short period of time. So this proves it's actually possible. But how do you maintain that higher feeling? One thing is very simple. It's just applying higher value to that experience. That is what Norman Cousins did. He applied a high value to laughing, watching silly shows. And that's what he did repeatedly, knowing that it would help him feel better. So simply shifting into something that makes you have a different feeling has tremendous value. Try watching puppies for a few minutes. Puppy videos on YouTube are adorable. It turns on the love emotion in the body and it turns off the fight or flight. Now, why? Because if you have time to sit around and watch puppies, you're obviously not in fight or flight. If you have time to turn on hilarious videos like Laugh-In, you're obviously not in fight or flight. The body really doesn't want to waste energy on fight or flight, but it has a higher value on that fight or flight emotion and feeling and hormones because it needs to keep you safe. But if you are intentionally putting your attention somewhere else, like puppy videos or the Laugh-In, your system knows that it's safe to turn off those inflammatory responses, those fight or flight responses. It'll lower your heart rate. It'll calm your system. It'll even help unrestrict your blood vessels for that period of time. So it has a very, very high value. But here's where a problem happens. The clients that I see come to me with long-term issues, and they're insistent that their pain has the highest value of anything else in their life, their emotional or their physical pain. They come to me because they need help. Can't seem to get out of that pattern. They can't seem to consciously put their attention on something that feels better for any length of time. And they keep coming back to, this is the one and only reality that exists, is this problem in my life. Here's where we have to go in deep into the nervous system to shift that pattern out. Here's where we have to actually work with the brain and body. And in our work, we actually put the focus back on that pain pattern, that fear pattern, whatever it is, to show the body, take a good look at this pattern that you're running. Let's take a good look at the energy it's costing you. Let's take a good look at why it's stuck in place. It's like a throttle being stuck in place. Not so good, because eventually you run into a brick wall, right? So we allow the system to really recognize itself. How does this feel? Where does it start? What happens in the middle? When does it end? Because every pain pattern has an initiation place, rises, and collapses. No pain pattern is actually constant. There are really intervals. We show the body the whole pattern from beginning to end, backwards and forwards, so that the body can then decide for itself, is this actually fight or flight pattern that is needed and necessary? Or is it a signal that's long since not been needed? Because most fight or flight patterns, most pain patterns, they start for a reason, the body recognizing an injury, emotional or physical. But we really only need those for a short period of time to recognize, hey, there's something you need to take care of. But then the system will get stuck in this pattern of sending the signal of pain and fear or guilt or shame, whatever it is, and forgets that it needs to turn it off, forgets that there's other patterns. So we go in and look at the pattern directly and show the body. Very often, once the body sees what the pattern is, it recognizes it's no longer needed. That signal is no longer needed, and that it's a detriment to the body to continue the stress response. But what moves up under it? When a body's been in pain for so long, it may have forgotten how to feel anything else. So what do we need to do to show the body a new pathway? And when I'm talking about the body, I mean the mind, I mean the physiology, I even mean your personality, the spirit. What we have to do is give it a glimpse of some of those higher feelings, some of those emotions that bring on love, joy, bliss, reverence, and even laughter. All right, let's take our next break. And when we'll come back, we'll talk about some ways that if you're in pain, if you're in stress, if you're in fear, that you can simply shift your attention and feel better right away. Let's hear from the good folks at the UK Health Radio Network. And we'll be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
All right, we are back and we are talking about this funny way that the body can shift emotion into something much lighter, something that feels better, and maybe even create a full healing in our body. So earlier we were talking about what value do you put on your better emotions? Now, when you're in pain, if I asked you, well, what about fun? What about joy? Tell me three amazing things that have happened in your life. Most people will tell you nothing ever good happened to me. There is no joy. I've never been happy ever in my life. Well, we all know that's not quite true. But in that moment, to the body, wanting to hold on to that pain pattern. It is true. So if you start to ask a few questions about what is the most beautiful place on the planet you have ever seen? I don't care who you are. You've seen beautiful things or beautiful places on the planet, even in a cityscape. What's interesting is you watch their eyes, and their eyes will move upward and just slightly off to the right, usually. And you see them go somewhere else. At the same time, you'll see the body relax. You'll see the breathing slow. You'll see color come up in the cheeks, and they'll start to describe a beautiful place on the planet. So for example, for me, if you say, what is the most awe-inspiring thing you've ever seen? I've seen so many, but strangely, there's one that is comes to mind immediately. And it's being on the Ponte Vecchio in Florence. Very unexpected sunset and the light reflecting on the river. It was so beautiful that I actually started to cry. And I was there with a very good friend, and she was crying. Then we started laughing. We're like, why are we crying? I have no idea. The emotion of the beauty of that place was overwhelming. And even now when I think about that, it brings on this feeling of awe and wonder. So each of us has one of these. When we think about them for even a moment, the eyes move into the position that can extract that exact neural pattern, memories, feelings, emotion, physical sensation, and all. You see the body change. You see the body go into a completely different pattern. So there we are. Gotcha. I've got a place that I can show the body the difference, the pain and the wonder and beauty. Now, in cognitive movement, we're experts at showing the body how to move between the two. So letting the body experience its pain. Yes, okay, we're going to validate it. We're not going to take it away and tell the body it can have it, because that doesn't work. But what we can do is cycle between the two. We do that using the eyes, because it turns out that the pain pattern has a very particular specific eye pattern as well. So if you can move between the pain pattern and the beauty and wonder, pretty soon it neutralizes out the pain, because the system is given another opportunity, an opportunity that provides the whole system more energy. In that moment, the physiology itself will put a higher value on that beauty and wonder. Now, the logical mind rarely does. The logical mind is like, no, 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 my problem is more important. I need to be focused on that. But the physiology, it's like, wait a minute, there's an opportunity here to utilize energy to do things like heal, which is better for the overall body. So you can do this too. If you are a person who has an ongoing problem in your life, something that feels unsolvable, put your attention on the most beautiful place on the planet you've ever seen. There's usually very little charge with this, because it's often a surprise, the beauty. It often is just puts you in such awe and wonder that you can't explain why it's so beautiful or awe-inspiring. It just is. So it is a little distracting to the body when you go into that. So put your attention there. Where is the most beautiful place you have ever witnessed, even for a microsecond? Just let yourself drift off into that place. And you may notice that your eyes just moved. Let yourself be there for a little longer than you normally would. Put some value on that particular memory, on that particular moment. Keep breathing into it. Stay a little longer. Look a little deeper into that moment and start to notice what your body feels like. Start to notice where your thoughts go, where your mood goes. Okay, and now you can come out of that and let yourself go back into the pain pattern, whatever the big problem is in your life. And start to notice what changes in the body, what shifts. Where did your eyes just go? For most of you, the eyes are going to be somewhere in the down half of your vision, looking at the floor, looking at your body, left or right, but kind of in a down position. For most of us, we are connecting with that physical part and feeling. All right, that's fine. Now, allow yourself to drift back up into that beautiful place on the planet that you saw. The one that put you in a state of absolute awe. Absolute awe. Now, if you can, shift to another one. Where's another place that is absolutely gorgeous? It may even be a place that you want to visit. For me, it's like Umapunku in South America. I really want to go and see those megaliths and see what they're about. And you can even hear the change in my own voice as I think about it. It's very exciting. I've never been there, but I've seen it on TV and I wonder about it. And as I do, if you're watching on camera, you'll see my eyes move up and to my right. What's happening as I'm shifting into my ideas and inspiration part of my brain, and I'm actually shifting into the left part of my brain as well, which is interesting because the left part usually is a little more linear. But for me, it's the place that holds my beauty and wonder memories, right? You might be different. Yours might be up and to the left, putting you in the right brain. But it doesn't matter. That part's not important. The part that's important is you start to recognize where your brain goes, where your eyes go to attach to that pattern in your brain that actually brings on this beautiful feeling state. Go back to that place. Go to the secondary location that is just so awe-inspiring and so beautiful. In my area, we have Crater Lake. I remember visiting there as a kid, and it's so massive. It's unexplainable. It's a feeling that is something I'd never felt before in my life. There's awe, there's wonder. There's actually even it's a little scary, but in the best way, exhilaration is the word that I describe it with now. So where in a place in the world is a place for you like that, like awe-inspiring, but also just exhilarating? Notice where your eyes move to and notice what's happening in your body. Notice that you can't quite do both at the same time. You can't feel your problem and be in this state of awe and wonder at the same time. Now let yourself, just for a moment, go back into that pain pattern and notice where your eyes moved. This is something we call cycling. It's cycling between something that creates this feeling, this light, lifted, energized feeling, and something that feels like your pain pattern, your problem. You will often find that they are on opposite sides of your body. You may find that your eyes are up and to the right in your reverence, in your awe-inspiring, and down and to the left in your feeling pattern, in your problem state. Okay, so this might seem like this is ridiculous and it's just a game. It doesn't solve my problem. But in fact, it can, because it shows your body a way out of the pain pattern, a way out of the inflammation. It shows your logical mind that for a short period of time, you don't have to focus on that. And there are other things on the planet, beautiful things, wondrous things. Before you know it, you might find yourself in solution for whatever that problem is. You might find that, oh my gosh, actually, what if I did this? What if I did that? Or you forget that you have the pain altogether and you go out and do something fun. So cycling between a real wonder emotion, a real physiological thing that you can reach to, not imaginary, but something you've actually experienced, will shift your body over time out of that pain pattern. It will often neutralize the pain pattern and allow you to move on. So this is absolutely an extraordinary thing to do, but what it requires from you, it requires from you to put a value on the things that are lovely in your life. There's another way to do this. Bill's favorite is to have you put your attention on someone that you love non-romantically, like a pet. If you've ever had a favorite pet, you know that you just gush when you think about them. If you pet them, it just turns on this love feeling. I have a client who we were working on something difficult, and their little dog was having some problems that day. And every time he was able to look over at her, his face just lightened, his eyes lit up, he smiled. And as we worked, that adoring of her, and it was just every so often, he was checking on her, really shifted his state. In fact, it was a major breakthrough for him that day because the pain took backseat to this love feeling. And his body learned that there's another option. And this one, this love feeling actually has more value, more energy. So convincing your logical mind to allow you to spend time in your love states has tremendous value for your body. So maybe you could do this. Did you ever have an aunt or a grandma that you loved warts and all? They weren't perfect, but for you, they were the most amazing human. You loved them so unconditionally, it didn't matter. Warts and all. Let yourself go to that human. Not any sadness of losing them, but the moments in time when you absolutely adored them. You'll find that your eyes just move to a specific place. Let yourself smile and remember the beauty of them. There's no reason for it. You just adored them. You can't help it. And then you can let yourself move back into the pain state again and move back into this unconditional love place. Letting your logical mind see the value in those feelings. See, in America, at least, we highly value our pain. We highly value our problems. We believe they are the true things and that all of these fluffy emotions are not true. They have no value. But the truth is they have the most value. We'll go back to where we started this conversation about laughter therapy. That laughter therapy in healing had the most value to this person's healing because it shifted their physiological state. All right, you guys, we've run out of time for this episode. I hope you find this as interesting as I do. And allow yourself to question, do I value my higher emotions? Do I value the emotions that feel good? And can I find a way to shift into that emotion by finding a beautiful memory, by going out in nature, by intentionally putting yourself in the environment of laughter? All right. We will see you guys again next time. Until then, be safe and be well.